What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show because you are the CEO of your own life. How I bootstrapped a six-figure e-commerce brand in its first year with zero ad spend. That was the subject line that Side Hustle Show listener Connor Meekin sent me that got my attention and earned him a spot in the guest chair today. The brand he's talking about is Bluebird Provisions, an organic bone broth and bone broth powder company that sells through retail stores like Whole Foods, through Amazon, and through its own e-commerce site at bluebirdprovisions.co. In this episode, you're going to learn how Connor came up with the idea, and I think it's a framework that you can use as well, how he turned that idea into reality for a relatively low startup cost, and the creative and effective ways he drives sales on and off Amazon today, which I think are applicable to anyone doing business online, not just sellers of physical products. Notes and links for this episode are at sidehustlenation.com/Connor, C-O-N-N-O-R. While you're there, make sure to download the free list of 25 e-commerce niche ideas that I put together to spark some inspiration for you if you want to follow a similar path. Once again, that's at sidehustlenation.com/Connor or through the link in the episode description of your podcast app. This story starts with Connor, then an elite level ultra marathon runner, being told he may never run again. Ready? Let's do it.
In my 20s, I was an ultra marathon runner, if you can believe it. So I got really into competitive running, running through the mountains here in the Pacific Northwest, and eventually was quite good. Ran a lots of races, you know, 30-mile races, 50-mile races, those types of things. Was quite good. Was actually winning some races, doing pretty well. And eventually, you know, the runners can kind of see where this is going. I ran a bit too much, was training a little too overzealously for a particular race, and I got injured. So messed up the ligaments and the fascia on the bottom of my foot so badly that doctors had never really seen the particular injury I had. And, you know, some of the radiologists and doctors I was talking to, you know, said that I wouldn't run again. So got like really depressed and started looking for other answers. I felt like Western medicine had kind of let me down. So I was looking at more Eastern approaches to healing the body and particularly fixing ligament damage. And I found some research to heal tendons and ligaments on collagen, gelatin, and bone broth in particular. So I was like, cool, what's this bone broth thing? Started doing some Googling, started trying to make it in my apartment at the time. And, you know, much to the chagrin of my neighbors, I was stinking up the whole apartment building with these pots of simmering bones at all hours of the day. But
I don't know. I think it smells kind of good. I don't know.
It does. But like when that's all you have for like, you know, weeks and months on end, it really like it just gets into all your clothes and it's just everywhere. So yeah, for better or for worse, I was drinking it every day and giving it to friends to try. I was that like annoying friend kind of advocating for it, and eventually started to heal my body and fix my injury. Now, I'm not going to say that bone broth alone is what fixed it. I was doing lots of other things as well, but kind of the holistic eating approach really spoke to me, and I just became really passionate about bone broth through the process of healing my body and you know, overcoming some of the mental health issues that I had as a result of the injury. At that point, I was looking around online and noticed that, you know, there were a few brands in the US popping up selling bone broth. No one really where I live in Canada. So kind of started it cheap and cheerful, trying to sell it online originally, and ended up backing into some retail business, selling it in grocery stores.
What gave you the confidence to say, my stuff is better than what else is already out there, or I can make this better than all the other brands and products that already exist?
Yeah, I would say at a fundamental level, ego has a lot to do with it, and stubbornness, I think. So, you know, I think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs have this similar kind of conviction and belief that they can always do something better than what's out there. So I think above all, having a strong conviction in bone broth in particular for me, and this idea was really kind of what sparked it and keeps it going now. Now, in terms of, you know, validating the idea and kind of figuring out if there was something there. Yeah, there were some, you know, companies raising money in the US selling bone broth, and seemed like they were doing quite well. So, you know, I'd been down there and checking out some of their products and trying them and seeing their sourcing and kind of what they're doing. And some of them are okay. I would say, you know, there's a few that are good products, but a lot of it's just garbage. You know, a lot of it is, you know, mislabeled stock or broth products that really doesn't have the protein or the, you know, the electrolytes or really the properties that you need in bone broth that gives you that nutrition. And, this is kind of a different tangent, but there's no legislation on what you can call a bone broth. So as a result, there's just a lot of companies coming out of the woodwork, even now, you know, mislabeling products. So it's a tricky one. I kind of just thought I could do it, you know, slightly better in a more presentable or easier to use format, particularly in the last year with our dehydrated product. So that's kind of, it's kind of what got us going.
Okay. So taking a look at the existing solutions on the market, the existing products on the market and saying, I think we can do better. I think we can do something more genuine, healthier, whatever, like putting a small pivot on it to differentiate in some way. And were you on Jungle Scout or Helium 10 and like looking at the sell through rate or looking at the sales, estimated sales volume for some of these brands on Amazon, just to say like, well, what is the addressable market size here? What do I think we could do? What kind of dent we could make?
I actually was. So, and now when friends and people ask me about that, validating really any idea, I actually point them to these tools, Jungle Scout or Helium 10, because, you know, it's pretty crazy the data they give you on, you know, Amazon revenue and, you know, estimated turns that companies are doing. It just gives you a really nice snapshot into the market size. So yeah, I used Helium 10 and I looked at how much revenue per month a lot of these bone broth companies were making in the US alone, you know, per SKU. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, it's really unbelievable. And it kind of just tells you like the mammoth that Amazon is. Like we all know it's like one of the biggest companies in the world, but bone broth's a small niche product. It's obviously growing, but you know, some of these brands were doing 250K US a month for one SKU, and you know, they got 10 SKUs on there. It's like, you do the math, it's pretty substantial business. So I figured if I can get to the first page on Amazon and then eventually to the top 10 for some of these certain keywords, then, you know, hey, we're probably going to be clearing 10K a month per SKU pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up like Google Trends search for bone broth. It tends to, I guess, spike around maybe holiday time each year, but you know, a slow and steady climb versus, you know, maybe the past 3 years. So a rising tide lifts all boats in a certain sense, but you know, trying to play in that market. So what happens after that? You've kind of got your existing home brewing formula, so to speak, and then like, but that's not scalable to the volume that you eventually want to do. I'm curious about from idea to having a product ready to sell. What did that look like?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways you can go with a food product. I would say there's the craft version where you're going to probably rent a commercial kitchen somewhere that has the right license you need, and you know, you're going to use the equipment and make your own product and, you know, maybe sell it at a farmer's market or online. Now, that's probably not the route most of your listeners would want to go. It's frankly too much work. So what I do and you know, what most people would do if they have a, you know, even a tiny bit of money to invest, is you're going to look for a contract manufacturer. So the key here is to find, you know, a manufacturer that has lower minimums. You know, the price per unit's obviously going to be higher with lower minimums, but if you can shoot for a manufacturer that'll do, if they'll do 500 units for the first run, that's great. I would say 1,000's probably more realistic to get a decent price so you can get a half decent margin on your first production run. So for us in particular, you know, we're a Canadian brand, but launching into the US market last year, that's what we did. So, you know, I put out an RFQ on, I think it was like a contract manufacturing website. I can find it for you after. And, you know, basically just started, you know, cold calling and cold emailing a lot of these databases I found. And nutrition and supplements, a lot of the ones you'll find in Google on the first page are not the ones you want to use, because their pricing is they basically exist to white label products that they already have in their inventory and just slap your label on it. And they're, as a result, their pricing is pretty bad. You want to find like the smaller, almost like mom and pop manufacturers in middle America that do other products, but they can also manufacture any powder product, really, is kind of what you want to find. So you want to think outside the box and kind of find these not supplement white label companies is what you want to find. And that's what I was able to find kind of by luck.
Interesting. Yeah. Go to like page 456 of Google, see who shows up there versus like the people who've invested all their money in marketing and SEO and show up on page one.
Yeah. And like the price difference is crazy. Like, you know, the manufacturing cost for the page one guys on Google, you know, you're going to spend almost double what you would, if you can kind of really dive in and find someone else. So, you know, we ended up finding a company that packages like grain products and stuff, but you know, they still have all the right licensing and insurance and all that to do any powder product. So, you know, we're like, hey, can you do this? They're like, probably. So yeah, just, I think being a little more creative with your outreach can go a long way.
Very interesting. Well, be sure to dig up that contract manufacturer website. We'll link that up in the show notes for this episode at sidehustlenation.com/Connor, C-O-N-N-O-R, which kind of leads me to the next question is like, well, the common Amazon FBA strategy, at least as it was a few years ago, was, okay, look at the sales volume, the estimated revenue that these brands are doing, and similar to you, try and make something slightly different, slightly better. You know, look at the reviews. What do people not like about this? And say, okay, I'm going to come in with the new and improved version of this, and I'm going to put my own brand on it. Is there a reason you didn't want to kind of like white label or, you know, make some pivot to something that already existed?
Yeah. Doing the research that you talked about on Amazon, looking at the reviews, a couple things stood out for us, particularly with powder products. The mixability is really, you know, it's difficult to nail. You know, everyone's had that protein powder, especially maybe not now, but years ago, if you were trying protein powders, you know, you'd get the one that's chalky and doesn't mix properly and kind of just ends up as like a gooey mess. That still happens a lot with collagen powders and also bone broth powders. So that was the main difference. If I could find one that actually tastes good, like real bone broth, and mixes properly, then, you know, there's our differentiators right there. You know, in terms of product development, it became a matter of finding, you know, some of these product developers and companies that were doing similar things and then asking if they could tweak things to, you know, in our case, make it, you know, more mixable, taste a bit better, and, you know, kind of tweak the recipe. And again, these product developing companies also don't have good SEO. So these ones are actually sometimes difficult to find as well. You can find them, but they're definitely not on the first page of Google.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess it is a similar process. And then find somebody who's already doing something similar and then add in your own tweaks to it. All right. So you find your manufacturer, you're tweaking the formula, and you say, okay, let's do a minimum order of run of these. You know, maybe it's 500 units, maybe it's 1,000 units. You comfortable sharing what that initial production run was? I imagine there's some like samples back and forth too, where you're testing this. Okay, this recipe worked. This one was better than this one until you get it right. But then kind of the next steps in getting this to market.
Yeah, lots of back and forth, lots of like, you know, FedEx rush samples between the US and Canada that took a while. But once we got through that stage, we did 1,000 for our first production run, and it worked out to around $5,000 for the raw materials, the packaging, and the production run. So like actually putting the product into the package, getting it ready, and shipping that to your 3PL warehouse or shipping it to Amazon. In a perfect world, you'd be able to ship all that to Amazon and not have to kind of mess around with a 3PL, but it never really works out that way. So yeah, we end up shipping it to Amazon's warehouses, our 3PL, and then we kind of were off to the races. And I think the timing for that's also important. A lot of people, you know, it's kind of like anything nowadays, you know, you basically just have to double the time you think it's going to take. So for me, I was like, oh, cool. Like once we have the formula, we could probably get this done in 2 months. And then, you know, 6 months later, you're twiddling your thumbs waiting for like a freight company to pick something up or find something. So
Never goes as fast as you'd like. 3PL is third party logistics. If you're curious about that acronym, it's basically a fulfillment service. So if you're taking orders from your own Shopify store and you don't want to ship those out of your garage or your spare bedroom, this is a service that will help get that done. And there's lots of different providers around the country there. Okay, so you get the stuff in stock and you now you're like, well, I'm $5,000 into this in several months. What happens next?
basically launched on Amazon and on our Shopify store in the US at the same time. Now, keep in mind, we did have, I would say, a little bit of traction selling in Canada before this. So as a result, our website had pretty decent organic search rankings for, you know, bone broth powder. And, you know, most of our visitors were from the US. So we had decent traffic, I would say. Email list was quite small and unengaged from the US, but it was growing. You know, we're adding, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 a month. So nothing amazing, but not bad. So a lot of it was some dedicated email outreach to US-based email list subscribers. And then the obvious thing that, you know, if you Google any Amazon launch for Amazon in particular, was me making a spreadsheet of anyone I knew in the US, you know, friends of friends, figuring out how I can get a hold of them and asking them to buy on Amazon using the famous search, find, buy technique that a lot of people talk about. So for your listeners, it is giving your friends and friends of friends specific keywords to find your products and asking them to go to Amazon.com, type in these search terms, sift through like probably 100 different products and hopefully find yours.
Yeah, here's a picture of the package. Yeah. This is what it looks like. This is the one you need to find.
Like it's comical. It's a ridiculous strategy that, you know, everyone uses, but ultimately it leads to a lot of like leakage and lost sales, I would say, because...
You think it still works though?
I think it still works, but yeah, I mean, your product is barely even findable in Amazon's database. So they're going to have to sift to like, for our case, it was like literally page 7 of bone broth powder. So along the way, you're going to lose a lot of people. A lot of untech savvy people aren't going to find it.
But the idea being, okay, if somebody's searching bone broth powder, they go through 7 pages of results. Miraculously, they find yours. They buy this thing. It's like, whoa, that sends all sorts of happy conversion signals back to the algorithm. So we got to move this thing up in the results.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, hopefully you can do that with, I don't know, 20 to however many you can, but like 20 to 50 people, hopefully in the first week. And, you know, as a result, Amazon's going to get that signal. Hopefully they move you up. Hopefully some reviews start coming in, but that's another tricky one where, you know, I've been told you don't want reviews from direct friends or anyone in your Facebook graph or social circle, because Amazon can find that and they might, remove it or even do worse to your account. So you want like friends of friends to leave reviews. And obviously the larger companies are, you know, setting aside a budget to buy a certain number of reviews for any product launch. So once you get into the nitty gritty, it's tricky. I would say not tricky. It's a little bit of work and on the front end, but it definitely does yield results.
But you're basically, you kind of have to resign yourself to not making the margin you ultimately hope to make on this product for this first run, or at least maybe half of this first run, because it's kind of, I got to give it away to build sales momentum. I got to give it away to generate reviews or otherwise kind of just build a critical mass on Amazon. I was curious about the initial email subscribers that you talked about. Well, we were already selling this stuff in Canada. How those people find you?
Yeah, so those people all found us through organic SEO. And yeah, kind of going back to the, you know, the party line for this episode is, you know, acquiring, you know, getting to revenue without third-party ad cost. So we've done it all through SEO. Early on, I wrote a couple of articles. You know, one was about, you know, what's the difference between bone broth and stock? And I didn't even notice it at the time, but finally I looked at some analytics and noticed it was getting a ton of traffic. I was like, whoa, this is kind of cool. I wonder if I can repeat this. So I just started picking some random topics, writing, you know, long articles, because I was, you know, reading Neil Patel back in the day and his, you know, all of his like SEO stuff. So figured out that I needed to write long articles to get them to rank for certain keywords. And yeah, we were getting some good traffic with about, you know, I don't know, 5 to 7 kind of pillar articles. That was bringing in good traffic, but the problem for us at the time in Canada was that, oh, hey, it's all American traffic. So that was the impetus for us to launch in the US.
For Connor, SEO is a source of consistent, high-quality, targeted traffic. And we're about to get into how specifically he takes that cold traffic and converts readers into email subscribers and customers. But how do you get Google to notice you in the first place? Cracking the Google algorithm isn't always easy. And maybe you're there right now. You're not sure what kind of content to create. Maybe your traffic is flatlining, or maybe you are creating content, but just not getting the results you like. It's super frustrating, it's time consuming, and it doesn't have to be that way. If your website is missing out on high value Google search traffic, let our new sponsor, Brandon Gailey, and the Blogging Millionaire Podcast be your guide.
The Blogging Millionaire Podcast breaks down in these short, digestible audio lessons the actionable SEO and traffic building tactics that actually work. Brandon's sites earn a collective 5 million monthly visitors from over 100,000 first page Google rankings. The guy knows what he's talking about. I'm looking at my Google Analytics, and that's at least 10x what I'm doing. When you apply what you learn on the Blogging Millionaire Podcast, you're going to start to see every blog post you create compete for a first page ranking, so you can stop toiling away in obscurity, so you can stop creating content that nobody's going to see. In fact, some of Brandon's listeners have gone from 10,000 to 100,000 visitors a month using these exact techniques. So open up your podcast app right now and do a search for Blogging Millionaire. Brandon's show is going to pop right up. Follow the podcast and commit to downloading the last 5 episodes. And you don't just have to take my word for it. The show's got more than 500 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts alone. Big thanks to the Blogging Millionaire for sponsoring this edition of The Side Hustle Show.
So you're just kind of answering questions that people might have, not necessarily about the product itself, but about the broader category of products. I like that. What's the difference between bone broth and stock as an example of a pillar post? And then somebody is searching for this kind of informational content. They say, well, I'm here already. You've provided me this answer. I trust you. I don't know if you have a sense of like, well, what percentage of those people buy something right away, or they sign up for your email list, or you can retarget them later. I mean, there's, you know, some benefits that come with having people stop by your site, but curious, you know, what does that do for you in terms of marketability?
It took us a little while to figure out email capture on the website, and particularly with blog traffic. You know, it's pretty cold traffic. It's really, you know, high top of the funnel traffic. A lot of these people aren't ready to purchase, and a lot of these people aren't interested in giving you their email address. They just want some information. So our opt-in conversion rate to get people on our email list is, it's usually between 3-5%. I've heard e-commerce companies tell you that you need to be like 5-10%, but I'm pretty sure those companies aren't getting all their traffic from SEO, because yeah, SEO traffic is generally not going to convert as well as, you know, Facebook ad traffic or something like that. It's just not as targeted. So
I'd love to be at 3-5%. It seems pretty good to me. So I'm at bluebirdprovisions.co, and I, you know, after I'm on the site for a minute, the pop-up comes up: last chance for free bone broth. Enter our monthly giveaway to win a 1-month supply of Bluebird bone broth. Enter your email here. This is kind of the primary offer that cold traffic is hit with.
Yeah, exactly. We've tested everything. You know, we've tested lead magnets with content, with, you know, PDFs. We've tested, we have our bone broth quiz that it does quite well, but nothing does quite as well as just the offer for a giveaway, a chance to win, get free bone broth. You know, evidently people like free stuff. So we're just going to leave that one there for now.
Yeah. What I see most commonly is, you know, get 10% off your first order, get 20% off your first order, enter your email here, and we'll send you your offer code. But tell me about the quiz. This is kind of cool.
This is right when we kind of got started online. This was like a year and a half ago. I saw a matcha company with a cool quiz on their website and noticed that it was just built on Typeform. So I was like, cool, I'm just going to, you know, rip off this guy's quiz, you know, change it to be more bone broth inspired. And the idea is, you know, if you have a quiz, it really just piques people's curiosity, right? It's kind of just a more creative way, frankly, to get an email address. But, you know, everyone loves to take a quiz. Everyone loves to get their results and kind of see their custom plan or, you know, recipe or custom product recommendations that we're going to give them. So it's about 10 seconds. You just answer a couple questions and it's going to spit out the perfect bone broth for you, Nick, who maybe loves to lift weights or is really hoping to get that natural skin glow in the summer. We're going to have a perfect recommendation for you. So yeah, it's kind of fun. And it's just a good way to get a bit more data on the customers that we are acquiring through email.
Okay, that's kind of cool. And so it collects an email and it points people to a product that they can buy now.
Yeah, exactly. And the conversion's okay on that. I think our sales cycles are a bit longer, so it takes a bit more time to nurture them through our automated email flows to get the sale. But yeah, it's super easy to set up for anyone. Like, you can be off to the races with a Typeform quiz. You know, you can get it set up in half an hour and it works quite well.
Do you have it that it shows the results right on the page, and you can do kind of like the conditional logic inside of Typeform, or people have to open their, you know, go check your email for your results?
No, it's all within Typeform with the logic that'll spit out a, you know, a result for you. Now, the issue is you're not going to get that result till you give us our email. So we do get some drop off there. But as long as you do submit your email on the type form, you're going to get the results.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that flow. I tried to build something, or I had something similar in Google Forms for my virtual assistant site that I sold about a year and a half ago. And it was like, you know, how many hours are you looking for support with? Do you care where this person is located? What kind of help do you need, or what kind of tasks do you need the most help with? And then it would come back and give recommendations. Actually, it would have an assistant service, you know, follow this template, you know, based on their answers, send this recommendation. And I don't know, it's kind of cool. Like, because like you said, people are into this semi-personalization. They understand it's kind of like a bulk thing, but it's more, and I should probably do something similar for Side Hustle Nation. It's like, well, here's 500 episodes to chew on. Go pick your own adventure. Versus like, well, if you answer these, you know, a few short questions, like, hey, let me help you narrow it down a little bit. And I think that would be providing a better path for people. Now, do you see people buying directly on the back of that? Like say, oh, this is the one for me. I better just buy it now.
We do. Yeah, absolutely. Now, the issue with that is we only have one SKU, our chicken bone broth powder in the US. And since most of our traffic is from the US, you know, you can kind of see where this is going, where we only have one product for them currently. Whereas in Canada, we have a wider array of products. So, you know, that runs into a bit of an issue there for us. If you don't have a large SKU set in terms of, you know, they're going to get the same results. But as we build out our product set in particular, and if you have a larger catalog, it really helps kind of just tell people and you know, it converts quite well, even with our limitations.
Okay. So that sounds like something that's coming down the road, just expanding the product line here. So I wanted to check out one of the informational articles, because I imagine most people, if they're finding you through SEO, they're landing on one of these article pages rather than the homepage. So now I'm on the difference between stock and bone broth. And at the very top of the post is the, not a pop-up, but like kind of the embedded form with the same offer, win free bone broth, enter for a 1 month supply, oh, and 10% off your first order here. So enter your email here. And then it goes on to the full article down here. Are you inviting people into the quiz from here? Oh, okay. There is a little embedded quiz on this page as well. And then the pop-up comes up too. So lots of ways to get people into the email list from this just cold article traffic.
Yeah, we're ruthless with that, and I think you have to be with blog traffic. It's you know, you feel kind of greasy doing it, but it's what works, and you know, you really have to just have it everywhere, just to have a shot at converting a cold blog visitor.
Yeah, the 3-5% is nothing to argue with. I'm trying to figure out how to perform a little bit better on that. I haven't calculated it lately, but I know it's way less than that. So after somebody gives you their email, what happens after that?
For e-commerce, the best email service provider that, you know, a lot of people are using now is Klaviyo or Klaviyo. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but we're using that. Your basic automated, they call them flows. So these are, you know, triggered emails based on when someone is added to your list. And the interesting thing you can do with quizzes and with Klaviyo is you can send them everyone has like their basic welcome series that you're going to get. You can send them different welcome series based on their different results from the quiz. So with the logic and in the back end of Klaviyo, you can kind of put certain tags on their account. If they answered, you know, A to question 2 or B to question 3. Yeah, it's really cool. You can give them like a customized welcome flow based on the product that they were recommended from the quiz. And you know, that flow is really just going to serve them that product on a platter and kind of tell them the benefits of that product, how to use that product. And that's all within the welcome flow. So we'll typically send, you know, in e-commerce, people call it like a buy or die sequence. So you really want them to purchase or unsubscribe, because having a bunch of people to sit on your list that are never going to purchase, but don't unsubscribe is pretty harmful to your email deliverability, and you're paying for those subscribers. So
I've never heard it called a buy or die sequence. It's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, again, like I guess one of the themes here is you have to be pretty aggressive, hoping to either get the sale or just get them to unsubscribe. And the way we do that is you're going to get your first email right away, and then you're going to get emails probably it's about every 2 days for the first 10 days or so, and then the cadence goes down to every I don't know, 3 or 4 days, something like that. So you're basically going to get like 20 emails over a couple of months, and hopefully people buy. You know, it does quite well. So that's our welcome flow that converts quite well. And we do tailor that based on geography and some of your quiz results. So the US shoppers are going to get a different quiz than the Canadian shoppers, and so on.
Okay, so you have built out all this automation inside of Klaviyo, and it's cool to be able to segment leads as they come in based on, you know, what they told you in the quiz, if they took the quiz. I think that's pretty smart. So this is Klaviyo, and I've heard this recommended for other e-commerce providers. I know Steve from My Wife Quit Her Job, like, he's big on Klaviyo, right? Here, I hear them sponsoring his podcast quite often.
Yeah, it's a massive business now. Like, oh my gosh, it's Klaviyo is huge now. So the welcome flow is going to be great. A lot of people in e-commerce use the abandoned cart flow. This is going to sound like a pitch for Klaviyo. They're super easy to set up. You can kind of get these, done in, you know, I don't know, each one can be done in half an hour. And then you're kind of just making money while you sleep, which is what everyone loves, isn't it? But so abandoned cart's great. So that's just going to email people, you know, maybe you can offer them a discount if they leave something in their cart and don't check out. Well, I would say one of the more creative ones that we're doing is a post-purchase upsell with SMS. So SMS is, you know, gradually getting more marketed to by marketers, or ruined if you're on the consumer side, maybe. So right now it's good. It's not going to be this good for long. I think there's going to be issues come up where you're not going to be able to SMS people, I think, in the next couple of years. So I would advise people to use it while you can. And one of the ways we're using it is a post-purchase SMS upsell. So a lot of people have these kind of, in e-commerce, have upsells on the post-purchase page. So you check out, you get like the thank you and hey, we're getting your order ready, yada, yada. And maybe there's an upsell on the page to buy a similar product at maybe a discount. We're doing that with SMS. So if someone gives us their phone number during the checkout, they're going to get an SMS from me, Connor, saying, hey, thanks for your first order. That's really great. While I have you here, you know, here's another product at 50% off. We can ship it in the same order if you check out in the next 2 hours or something. So that one does really well for a couple of reasons. In e-commerce, it's basically all about getting your average order value to a certain level and just raising that. And if you can get a quick upsell, you're going to be able to ship all of those items in the same box for a similar price, and you're paying your 3PL probably, you know, per unit or per box they're packing. So if they can just throw one more pouch of bone broth in there, in our case, it's really just free money.
Okay. Yeah. It's like a lower margin, but it all washes out with shipping costs and other related fulfillment costs. Like, you already acquired a customer. So like you said, let's increase that average order value.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, 50% is maybe too much, but you know, works well for us. And if you can, the tricky part with this is sorting it out with your 3PL, you know, your fulfillment company on the back end, because they're going to see it as two different orders. And yeah, you want to make sure that they're not shipping it as two different orders. Hopefully they have some communication and way to combine those two orders into one.
Is the SMS through Klaviyo as well?
We are, yeah. Klaviyo added SMS, I don't know, 6 months or a year, maybe a year ago now. And yeah, just for simplicity, we use theirs. People seem to like it. There's a few other ones that some kind of like e-commerce purists say are a bit better. But I mean, having it all under one roof makes it a lot easier for me.
And people just like reply yes or no if you want this thing, and then it is automated?
Yeah, exactly. You can set up, again, like kind of conditional logic based on certain keywords that someone will reply with too. So if someone replies with, you know, cancel or a question with a certain keyword, you can trigger certain answers that are automated as well.
Okay. You're making me think a lot about like informational content, email capture, different ways to get people in, pointing them where they need to go. This, you know, welcome email welcome sequence, the buy or die sequence. Buy or unsubscribe sounds a little friendlier than buy or die. And then, you know, some creative upsell offers to, you know, increase that order value. How about the logistics side of things? So you mentioned you've got the third-party logistics provider, and that's handling the Shopify orders, and then Amazon is warehousing and handling like the FBA orders. That's always the tricky part with physical products. It's like, well, I've actually got to deal with this thing. And especially now with you doing international business, it's kind of a challenge, I imagine.
Yeah, the first thing I'll mention is, so I live on the west coast of Canada in Vancouver, and our fulfillment location is in Michigan in the US. I've never been there. I've never been to our production facility. I've never been down there to do anything related to this product. So you can do it from abroad quite easily now, which is great. But setting these up takes a little bit of work here and there. Our 3PL, so the one in Michigan, they have a good software integration with Shopify. And I would say this would be like a must have when you're vetting a 3PL. And, you know, most of them do have it. I would say some of the smaller ones maybe don't, but they can tap into Shopify's shipping and fulfillment API, and they will automatically ship your orders from Shopify, and they're going to add the tracking number back into Shopify when it ships, and they're going to send that and mark it as fulfilled. And the customer is going to get the automated, shipping update all through the API, which saves you a ton of time. You're going to pay a bit more for access to, that software solution through your 3PL, but it makes it so much easier. For the Amazon side, particularly with a new product, they're going to restrict the amount of inventory you can send to FBA. So that makes it a bit difficult. It's like, it'd be nice to just have all of your inventory there for Amazon. But, typically you have to replenish every 2 months or so. So most of our inventory will sit in Michigan at this fulfillment center, 3PL. And they are going to service the Amazon FBA replenishment as needed. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. As you go along and figure this out, there's kind of like a few different tweaks you need to make to optimize things. Like for example, for us, obviously on Shopify, we ship, one pouch, two pouches, but when we're shipping to Amazon, you're going to have them all, you're going to have a bunch of pouches and boxes on a pallet, or when you're a bit smaller, you're going to ship, larger cases to Amazon. Maybe you're going to ship like 100, 200, 300 units at a time. So, little things like when you're manufacturing, you want as many pouches per box or per case as possible. So, our first production run, it was 24 units per case or per box. And now we're doing like 50 pouches per box. And that's just going to save on your shipping cost when you have it at your 3PL, when you do ship it to the Amazon's FBA warehouse. So like little things to optimize your shipping spend is really, really helpful, particularly these days when freight is like just a nightmare. So, and you learn those things along the way.
You learn these things along the way. As you know, I'm a fan of just-in-time learning, which is studying up on the skills and strategies you need when you need them, rather than just accumulating knowledge for knowledge's sake. Thankfully, this is where our sponsor Skillshare comes in. The world's largest online learning community is offering Side Hustle Show listeners a 1 month free trial so you can be inspired, learn new skills, and discover hidden talents with online classes from Skillshare. When you start your free trial, you're going to find a huge library of on-demand expert taught classes on topics like social media, video production, copywriting, freelancing, productivity, and tons more. For example, we're talking e-commerce today. There's a popular Skillshare original class called E-commerce Essentials: How to Start a Successful Online Business. It's taught by Tracy Wallace, and it covers everything from niche selection to competitive analysis, all the way up to creating your own online store and setting your business up for profitability. Whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you are creative. That's why Skillshare has classes for every skill level. With short lessons, hands-on projects, and classes designed for real life, you can tap into the creativity that we all have inside. Skillshare helps you move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. You'll create real projects and get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish real growth. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/sidehustle, where Side Hustle Show listeners get a 1 month free trial. Again, that's 1 month free at skillshare.com/sidehustle.
Yeah, I'm thinking because of your SEO prowess, you became less reliant on Amazon, where I see a lot of people starting their e-commerce empire, they get hooked on the Amazon traffic fire hose and say, well, now how do I get these people off of Amazon? And it's really hard to do. But if you are able to generate your own traffic, your own customers, as you're able to do, then Amazon becomes like this other sales channel that we have versus my whole business is reliant on Amazon. What's the, don't know, what's like the breakdown? So you said, I think, 300K in sales last year. What did the pie chart look like between the brick and mortar, the Shopify, and then the Amazon stuff?
Last year, our bricks and mortar, so our main, you know, grocery store partners, Whole Foods. Last year, that 300K, that was probably almost half of that, I would say. And the other half was basically half Amazon, half Shopify. Now, if you fast forward to this year, we're probably going to do double that. And the pie chart is going to look quite a bit different. So the bricks and mortar is basically flat. Like, we're not growing in bricks and mortar. It's been pretty flat, which is disappointing, but it's okay because we're focused on online, Amazon and Shopify. So now our Amazon's actually going to, it's already eclipsed our Shopify sales, which, you know, makes me a bit nervous and uncomfortable for the reasons you mentioned. But it's going to be probably 25% bricks and mortar, probably 50% Amazon and 25% Shopify. So
yeah, once you have a product that hits in the Amazon search, then all of a sudden it's off to the races and it's a hard time to keep it in stock.
That's the thing. And I underestimated, just the monster and the snowball you can get with Amazon once you have done things correctly and gotten enough reviews and feedback and, you know, people actually buying your product. So yeah, Amazon is increasingly a larger amount of our revenue, which is great. Yeah. Obviously it's hard to, you don't really want to, you know, put everything into Amazon or any one channel. Cause you know, obviously people who did that on Facebook are having issues. And for us in the past, actually, we've done that, like in retail, you know, Whole Foods was a massive percentage of our revenue in the really early days. And that just got dwindled into as other competitors got on the shelf. It kind of just made our slice of the pie smaller. So that's going to happen at Amazon. It's going to happen everywhere. So I think, yeah, just trying to diversify and not just be expectant on Amazon, because we got kicked off Amazon pretty soon after we launched as well. We found out that we basically got like 5 1-star reviews and they were just like one word reviews. Like they didn't really say anything, but Amazon, like they're still up there. And Amazon actually took our product off because they have something that's like, if you get a certain amount of negative feedback in a really close like period of time, you get flagged sometimes. So we actually got kicked off for 2 months, right around just before Christmas in October.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah. Like it just goes to show, like you can't like,
and then you have to like appeal it and say, well, these were suspicious reviews to begin with. You think it was like a competitor trying to sabotage you or something?
I think so. I can't prove it, but I don't really understand who else it would be. There's, you know, there's no context, there's no info. And obviously with Amazon, you can't really like dispute any reviews, or, you know, you can like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's really difficult. So, you know, Amazon's famously, you know, what do they call themselves? The most customer centric company or whatever. But a lot of times that's at the cost of the merchants and sellers like me. And yeah, if you're a small seller, it's difficult. It's an uphill battle. It took me like, you know, 30 phone calls with different customer service reps. And it took 2.5 months of like support tickets and phone calls and just headaches to figure out even like why it was taken off and then finally getting it back.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So frustrating, especially right in the heart of Q4. I'm sorry for that, but it's like you said, got to diversify, you know, don't want to be too reliant on any one sales channel. Like, what's your take on the current Amazon landscape? Because over the last 5, 6, 7 years, it's hard to imagine one company being at the center of more side hustles, right? You got the FBA stuff, you've got print on demand with Merch by Amazon, you've got Amazon Associates, you've got self-publishing. It's a juggernaut, but it's not always as you saw. Like there's some risks to be there as well. Like for a new prospective FBA or e-commerce seller, like what words of advice would you have for them?
Yeah, this is a tricky one because I just said how Amazon, you know, kicked us off, but I think it's still the lowest barrier to entry with the highest upside for a new, you know, e-commerce seller. So yeah, particularly if you, you know, a lot of these people who are getting started don't even have a website or a domain with any kind of authority or SEO juice. So in that case, I mean, Amazon's really the place to start. You can get started and you can take advantage of the traffic that Amazon gets and hopefully direct some of that to your product. Now, I think obviously it's challenging figuring out, the ways to get ranking. So you need to invest some money. You're going to need to ideally have a bit of a network or some people that you can ask favors of. You're going to need a bit of capital to get started. But yeah, as much as Amazon is hard on their sellers and merchants, it's still like, it's just the upside is really unbelievable. And that's why you see all the big brands on there.
Yeah. I'm not trying to find the right word, but it's like, can't live with them, can't live without them, yeah, kind of a thing.
It sucks.
You don't want to ignore it because it's huge sales potential, but you know, tread carefully, I guess, while building up your other sales channels. On the brick and mortar side, what was that conversation like? How do you figure out who the decision maker is for a new potential product on the shelf?
Here's the best tip. So we got into Whole Foods, and the cool thing was we were actually approached by the Whole Foods buyer. So every region has kind of a head buyer or a scout that's looking at new products. Now, these people are the notorious gatekeepers, and they're incredibly difficult to get a hold of. So what I did in the early days was I told all my friends and family members, hey, go to every Whole Foods in this region and ask to speak to the manager and request this product. And that's what we did. We had people going in. I had my dad going in. He's our best ambassador at this point. He goes in and he goes, hey, there's this new bone broth, Bluebird Provisions. I'd love to see it here. And got a bunch of friends within a couple of weeks doing that. And actually, before I knew it, like the buyer from Whole Foods emailed me. I thought it was like a joke. I thought it was someone messing with me. I didn't think it was actually him. but yeah, so that worked for us a couple of years ago. I don't know if it would work now. It's more difficult now to get in, but yeah, that's other than that.
It's interesting. That's a really cool like grassroots effort, and it's not something you can do yourself. It's like you gotta bring your network into the game with you. But if they hear it enough times, it's cool that they're taking note of that. Well, what is this stuff? I guess we better reach out and figure out more.
Yeah, we got lucky. And, obviously it goes back to like, it takes a village to figure these things out. I think what some people are doing now, apparently a lot of these buyers are on LinkedIn. So if you can get at them on LinkedIn somehow, sometimes that works. Other than that, it's difficult. Like, you can cold email them now. Haven't had much success with that. It's, the retail landscape's difficult right now.
Is there a target margin that you're shooting for between these three different sales channels?
Definitely. I would say for online and Amazon, gross margins. So this is before you pay for shipping and fulfillment expenses. You're going to want 80%. So put another way, your cost of goods sold or, all your manufacturing costs to get one unit of your product ready to sell is ideally 20%, maybe 25%. And then you need to, a lot of companies are going to set aside, 15 to 25% to acquire the customer. So historically, this has been Facebook ads, sometimes Amazon ads. We don't typically do that. So we have a bit more leeway in terms of margin. And your fulfillment cost is going to be, 25 to 35% to pick and pack it, to ship it. And that's pretty similar to Amazon as well. Amazon takes about 15% of every sale they make. And then if they are also shipping it, so if it's FBA, it's going to be, plus or minus another 15% to ship it. So if you're doing FBA, you got to account for like 30% from Amazon. Yeah. And then retail's somewhat similar, I would say. Like if you really want to invest in retail, there's just so much trade spend. So sometimes you're using like a third-party broker just to get into a grocery store, because grocery stores are really like an old boys club. It's all about who you know. So if you're paying a broker, that's 5%. If you're using a distributor, which you probably will use if you get to any scale, distributors are going to take 20 to 30% of every sale just to move the box from your warehouse to each individual store, because it's hard to, you can't service every grocery store on your own. And the grocery store is going to mark it up 35%. So it works out somewhat similar. You need to have like a pretty high gross margin to get there. I would say online is certainly better because of the antiquated way retail and grocery stores work. There's just a lot of people are making money off your product, but the seller. So it's a tricky one.
Yeah, hopefully some of it shakes down to you at the end of the day. I appreciate you sharing that versus the world of online business where it's like, well, it costs me my domain name and hosting and maybe some content writing services. And now it's almost all margin. But now for a physical product, yes, the cost of goods, physical fulfillment, all these different fees and things. Everybody gets their piece of the pie along the way. But that was a good breakdown. So thanks for sharing that. I did want to know on the written content, like the SEO side, like, were you doing anything proactive to build links? Or was this just by virtue of writing in-depth content on this topic that maybe other people weren't covering, you guys kind of rose to the top?
Some of our links definitely come from just writing the best piece of content on a certain topic. So we ranked quite well for collagen historically because I wrote a really good article on collagen. Now, in terms of actual dedicated backlink outreach, I think kind of the low-hanging fruit that I have used and kind of learned about was two different things. So if you're part of any alumni associations or networks, so if you went to university or maybe your high school, any clubs or teams that you've been a part of, if they have a website with decent domain authority, and if it's a website that gets decent traffic, you can usually just email them and say, hey, I'm an alumni. Is there a database for alumni? Can you link my website up? That would be great. Gotten a lot of good backlinks doing that. Particularly, a lot of people go after like edu.edu domains. So if you went to a university that has some alumni networks, I got a lot of good backlinks doing that. And then I also, occasionally, if it's a really high kind of domain website, I'll ask, I'll pitch a guest article where maybe I'll write about Bone Broth or business or something like that. So I was able to do that for my university alumni as well, kind of write like a small business piece on what we're doing, and was able to get featured on like a couple different faculties because I had a couple of different majors before I graduated. I took a couple of victory laps, so you can tap into each of those majors and get different backlinks from each one. So
yeah, everybody hits pause to go email their schools. That's okay, cool.
Yeah, those are the easiest ones. And then from there, there's like Harrow, H-A-R-O, help a reporter out. You can sign up for that and get the emails. Basically, it's like journalists looking for sources. And if you're the source on something, you can usually be quoted in articles and sometimes get a backlink. But I mean, it's a real crapshoot trying to do that in my experience. It's a lot of work. And sometimes you don't get follow links. Sometimes you don't even get a link. So that's hit and miss.
Yeah, it is. It can be time consuming. But I have a little Gmail filter that says if the helper reporter email contains the phrase side hustle, put a star by it. So I make sure to open that one and see what that's about. And so, if there's something related to ultra running or injury or bone broth collagen, something like you have a few different keywords set up versus scrolling through every single one, trying to find, okay, is there something relevant in here for me to answer? But it's still not, I don't know. I should try to really track like my percentage hit rate for those. And it grows with time too, because I kind of lead in with, hey, Nick Loper from Side Hustle Nation, since 2013, we've been building this award-winning community, with 75,000 members. I'm a multi best-selling author and TEDx speaker, like trying to pump up like the first couple lines with as much of your resume as you can and like throw in different numbers, like just trying, because they're getting so many pitches, they're getting so many answers, like trying to lend some credibility to it. He's like, hey, I'm a ultra marathon, race winner. I started this six-figure e-commerce brand, like blah, blah, blah. I don't know. That's what seems to have worked a little bit better with Help a Reporter rather than my old strategy, which is just like, hey, here's the answer to your question.
I like that. Do you mind me asking? So you set up your filters in Gmail. So do all of them kind of get archived and marked as unread? And then the ones that have the certain keyword get starred? Is that how you have it set up?
Yeah. So everything comes in. It still is marked as unread if I do want to go in and randomly check it out, which happens very infrequently. But the ones that do contain the search filters or those search keywords just have a little star by it. So it's like, okay, it catches my eye in the inbox, and I know to go check that one.
Cool. I'm going to set that up. Thanks for that. That's
all
great.
Right. Life hacks on the helper reporter side. Anything that you do differently or anything that surprised you the most since starting down this path?
That's an interesting one. I would say kind of what we've talked about, the Amazon snowball is real. Like if you can get a product with a bit of momentum, it's going to be really crazy, to keep up, which is great. In our case, like we're sold out on Amazon right now, and we're not going to have more inventory till 2 weeks from now. So it's a good problem to have, but it's brings in a bit of stress. Yeah. On the other side, Amazon's, you know, fickle, can kick you off and not really give you an explanation. It's a gift and a curse. It's a tricky one.
And meanwhile, you're ordering more and more inventory to fulfill like this increased yeah. demand. And then they're saying like, well, now we're going to shut you off. And you're like, well, how am I going to move all this stuff?
Yeah, it's a really tricky song and dance. Like inventory forecasting on its own is a really difficult one for a small business, and having the capital to figure that out too.
Do you worry about they're farming all this data and 6 months from now, the Amazon Basics version of whatever product you have comes down the road?
I do. Yeah, I definitely do. It's interesting. They're getting, you know, there's a lot of litigation around that right now. So I'm you know, kind of loosely watching what's happening with that. I think Amazon is making some concessions proactively, but obviously the Amazon Basics is still around. I still think there's like bigger fish to fry for them before they get to bone broth powder. So kind of hoping, I'm hoping that. But yeah, it's a good point. Like there's, if it's not Amazon, maybe, you know, Campbell's Soup's going to come out with a bone broth. A lot of these big companies like Whole Foods is already white labeling bone broths now. So yeah, there's going to be more and more competition. But yeah, as long as hopefully you're doing things right and you're acquiring customers and kind of nurturing them, hopefully you can, quote, I'm not going to say like build a brand because, you know, that gets thrown around a lot, but hopefully you can have some loyalty.
Yeah, exactly. Where people like seek you out versus just, you know, willing to go to the lowest common provider, lowest price provider. What's next for you? What's on tap for this year?
Yeah, this year we are trying to keep products in stock, which is becoming more of a challenge with freight issues these days. But that's really exciting. Developing a new product that we're hopefully going to launch mid-summer. So that's going to be a beef bone broth powder, which is a dehydrated beef bone broth to complement our chicken bone broth. That'll be a big one. So that's going to, you know, get us through the summer and into Q4. And with that, kind of just doubling down on what's got us here. So SEO is really what we're doubling down on, because I'm kind of in this for the long term, not just trying to, you know, make a quick buck. So figuring out different strategies for SEO and figuring out how we can kind of scale out our writing process and procedures. And with that, looking into a few different things, you know, like I'm sure you know, there's like these like AI software for writing now, which is kind of interesting. I'm trying to figure out if that's something that is kind of ready for prime time or not. So
yeah, I haven't played around much with those, but they're pretty slick. A friend of mine gave me a demo of one and you're like, oh wow, that's actually a somewhat decent paragraph. You know, it's like you're learning the software. It's like, well, I probably could have just written it myself, but you know, I'd imagine at a certain point it gets pretty good.
So yeah, we're just going to double down on what's working for us, and just going to keep trying to grow the online presence really, and then keep Amazon kind of doing what it's doing.
Well, very cool. Happy to hear about everything that you've built so far. bluebirdprovisions.co is where you can find Connor and his products. Thanks so much for joining me. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
SEO is not dead. So you can invest in SEO. You can find ways to do it, even if you're not a strong writer or hate writing. You know, there's some pretty simple processes that you can follow to really invest in yourself, invest in your website, and it's going to bear fruit in the long term.
It's very true. It took me a long time to learn that, but I'm reaping the benefits of finally figuring that out at this point. So Connor, I appreciate you joining me. Appreciate you sharing that. Thanks so much for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Connor. A couple takeaways I wanted to highlight. First was on the idea selection front, and that was just the concept of scratching your own itch. Connor had found firsthand the benefits of bone broth when he was healing from his running injury and couldn't find exactly what he was looking for on the market. And at the same time, he saw that existing products were making plenty of sales, existing bone broth products. So there was some pre-validation there that helped give him the confidence to develop his own brand. I know this isn't groundbreaking advice. Tim Ferriss, Noah Kagan, they'll tell you the same thing. Look at problems in your own life or where you're spending a disproportionate amount of your own time or your own money, and maybe there's a business idea in there. In fact, that same framework has me thinking of some other business ideas related to podcast marketing, affiliate marketing, and maybe there's some potential software solutions to try and solve some of my own pain points in those areas. Now, to spark
a little inspiration, I did put together a list of 25 e-commerce niche ideas to get your creative juices flowing. You can download that for free at sidehustlenation.com/Connor, again, C-O-N-N-O-R, or through the link in the episode description of your podcast player app. So that was takeaway number one, to scratch your own itch. The second thing I thought was really powerful was Connor's approach to SEO, and specifically looking at articles on your website as these long-term top-of-the-funnel assets where you can create them once, get them ranking, and you keep them up to date, of course, but let them feed you traffic, leads, and customers every day. You know what's really rewarding? Not working, but having your website and your systems work for you. And yeah, it takes time, it takes effort to set that stuff up, but it's leveraged time. Now, Connor mentioned converting 3 to 5% of his traffic into email subscribers, which is awesome. And he's got me rethinking some of my own opt-in efforts because the Side Hustle Nation site does get a lot of traffic, but doesn't get anywhere near that many emails a day, percentage-wise. So I thought that his giveaway idea was really cool, especially for e-commerce brands. I thought his personalized quiz funnel was really cool, and that's something that can be replicated in just about any niche. It's honestly something that's kind of been on my to-do list for years for Side Hustle Nation, just haven't prioritized executing on it. Our episode with Tori Dunlap was another example of a quiz funnel that was doing really well, and it was traffic from TikTok in her case. But traffic plus conversions, that's the name of the game, and I liked Connor's approach to SEO. Provide these detailed, accurate, informational posts, get people on the list, and then point them to the products or services that are best for them. Since we recorded, I've actually been testing some new opt-in call to actions on some higher traffic posts to see if I can bump up my own opt-in percentage inspired by this conversation. So big thanks to Connor for sharing his insight. Thanks to Skillshare and the Blogging Millionaire podcast for sponsoring this week. Make sure to unlock unlimited access to thousands of on-demand expert taught classes to level up your side hustle skills with a free trial of premium membership at skillshare.com/sidehustle, and add a steady drip of quick, free, actionable blogging and online business tactics to your earbuds when you subscribe to the top-rated Blogging Millionaire podcast. That is it for me. Most importantly, thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show, where you'll meet the mom who gets paid to help kids fall asleep. I'll see you then. Hustle on.